probably a lot more to cover today. We can come back to this perhaps later. When the presentations were made in the Anchorage Caucus in Juneau, there were really two schools of thought. As I heard it, the majority of the senators and representatives actually unanimously support the funding of the dormitory, but the majority felt that the concept of apartments was criticizable on several grounds, one of them being that it did not provide the traditional campus living experience that students opting for Fairbanks and other institutions can aspire to, and which most of us are familiar with in our own traditional college experience. Another concern was the implications for what some call competition with the private sector. The response to that was that this did not come up arbitrarily, but student desires were taken into account, and the profile of the Anchorage student is a little different from the student body at Amherst or Vassar. And in particular, there are more married students and more older students. I think that's a fair reflection of two points of view, and there were some dissident voices in our caucus who felt that the apartment complex idea was a better idea, but I think the majority felt otherwise. So I'd like to open that up, because this has become a public debate. It's politically sensitive, and I think it's going to be important for us to report to our colleagues from Anchorage as to what we hear here. Who would like to start on that?
So, I'd like to ask Chris.
Well, to start off, but I think the nomenclature apartment is a wrong word. I think it should have. It's always been student housing. And as such, what happened was the Board of Regents asked us, initially they did offer a dormitory also, in fact, that you didn't point that out. And what happened
with
was...
dormitories first, with traditional class.
But the campuses and the institutions, they said that would be a good idea to find out and do a market study, to find out what the really public wants, and that's what happens in most situations. Any business, you go out and do some kind of study to see whether there's an economic viability or who the group of people that would be housing. So for both Juneau and for Anchorage, we did a market study. We had two different consultants. In our market study, we found out that the students as a whole were not the kind of students that you and I went to school, where we were put in a dormitory, and a bed, and a closet, and that's what they then we went to do. Because most of the students that we have today are a different kind of a breed. They have a lot of discretionary income. They have hi-fi and TV sets and other equipment that they need to put in. Besides, they also are not the same age. Also, there are a variety of students who come to the university in Alaska, at least, and the chances can correct me. They're not necessarily 18 years old. They're 26 years and more. So their desires are different. So to put them in a dormitory kind of complex was not the kind of thing that they wanted. And based upon the report, and it was all gone to the campuses, that the kind of combination of housing that we wanted was a mixture of an apartment combination. It was basically two bedroom apartment complex type. It's not necessarily that, because what it did was it housed four students, or two students, or a married student, or you could combine the four student complex and make them into what we call an eight student complex. So a number of these combinations could be done. And to start out, but we felt that, at least the university felt that it would be imprudent for us to at least start up with a dining facility. Because there it entailed bringing in not only administrative services for providing the necessary function for administrating food service, but also building dining hall complex that would be a different kind of issue. It had different connotations. People who are 26 years and older would naturally prefer to eat on their own. And as far as from the university's point of view, it would be cheaper by not going into that kind of dining room service. Maybe Dave can elaborate a little bit as to why Anchorage campus itself didn't feel like...
Well, let me pursue this, though, and be the devil's advocate for a second. You mentioned that one of the differentiations in this student profile is that there's relatively more affluence. This is going to be subsidized housing by the government. What's the profile of the students who most need the subsidy? Are those the older students, or are those the younger students? See what I'm saying? I'm wondering about the rationale for a market study where we're going to have far less housing than the demand is in the first place, and secondly, how we relate who we're helping here in terms of where the need is, and whether that segment that needs to help most would fit this profile of the older student living here. So,
perhaps a little differently, if the question is whether or not a state is going to provide general fund policy, then perhaps that would be a very viable question of should they provide any resources whatsoever for the housing. But if the decision is to provide that housing, then I don't think that the question of whether it's a dorm or whether it's an apartment really is, in essence, germane. If you're saying you're going to subsidize or not subsidize, because if you take a dormitory, I would take a little trip with you if we could, okay?
Yeah, but it's germane because it reminds us some, because it may or may not duplicate facilities already in town.
Yes.
And those who feel that it duplicates say, why is government doing this? That's why.
But this is where I'm going to take you, okay. Art. I've been involved in housing. I started out as a student in a residence hall and as an assistant director, and managed, did all these things, and did a number of studies within those units. And what you find is, I think, is a typical, with some variation, residence hall. You walk in the front door of the hall, and there's a lobby. And then off that lobby is a desk, and off that lobby is a large lounge, and then there's a public restroom. You go down the hallways, and there are little rooms, again, that we've all seen these halls. You take the apartment, and you take all those kind of common areas, and put that into a living situation, you come up with roughly the same number of feet. It's about a 250 square foot ratio per student, whether you divide it into large lounges or small dining rooms or a large kitchen in a small, it comes out that way. Now, in residence halls, they've completed studies, I've even done some on the social contact in residence halls. And when you have a function, whether it's a dance, a speaker, a party, this relationship, you get about 25% attenders within the hall. And I want you to think back in your hall and see how many people attended and how many didn't. Get about 25%. You get 50 who come and pick up the cookie and the punch and go back to their room. But you only get about 25% attenders. Administratively, in a residence hall, you have the director, which is normally this master's degree counselor type person. Assistants, student assistants all over the floors, one to a ratio of about 25. And you do a time study on those people and you find out this master's degree counselor, programmer, spends roughly 70% of their time doing keys and laundry, and about 30% of their time programming. I think these are typical, in dormitories. We're saying in apartments that we can eliminate a lot of the costs. We can eliminate operational costs. If you go to the student, in your room, when you were in those dorms, you cleaned your own room, you just didn't clean the hallways. But the student, if you have the apartment, the student cleans their whole room. So you eliminate a lot of operational costs in this as it goes down the line. Now, if we aren't going to have housing, then I think that's a different issue. But if the housing is going to come, the most efficient operational cost of providing that housing will be apartments.
Can I jump in?
I think what Joe is talking about, certainly what I'm concerned about, is that if the student who is 26 years old and has more money and wants to live in an apartment is the one who we're providing a subsidy for, the whole question of whether we need campus housing ought to be raised anew. Because if that student has the money, we probably shouldn't subsidize that student. That student ought to buy off-campus housing. May I finish? If that is the universe that we're addressing, then we're not sure that we really should subsidize it. What we are concerned about is, and I think that's what Joe's question tried to address, who is the needy student who needs to be served on campus, who should be subsidized? Isn't that basically what you're after?
I think the feasibility study done by Leonard Lane speaks to a figure, and that's the 17, 18, 19-year-old student. And this was not just the person who asked the ice cream question, you know, of what it like to, but those who actually live in the housing. I think the current 85 figure in that group of hard demand, hardcore users of the housing, 650 some students in the ages 17, 18, 19, not 26. It was 600 and some students in the 17, 18, and 19 year old age group. But isn't it? That other group is a very soft area. If we were using that figure, we'd be up somewhere around 2,000 students.
No, no, no. But
then what are we talking about?
You're getting everybody confused here. I think what
I must admit, I am confused.
All right, okay. I understand. Let's back off a bit here. Why do we have dorms in the first place? There's been, as from the region's point of view, we were initiated the cry for the dorm, because we got quite a few students coming to our meetings that we would want to have dorms. Now, one of the reasons why is that they want to have, on UAA, they want to have a more of an integrated university experience, like a lot of us we've gone to, where we had lived on dorms, on the campuses, and we've become more of an active campus life. In the case in Juneau, if you were all there 2.5 years ago, they were hostile. So the point is, if you're not going to do it, we want to know why, we want to get you off the board of reason, get somebody who is going to push you there. And I was attended those meetings, and I chaired them, and there was a and they reason why they wanted, because there was nothing available in Juneau at the time. All right. Now, let's get back to what we did here. Leonard Lane and Associates did a survey here in Anchorage of who would use the dorms. We have 2,500 or how many do we have, Jim, here, who's going to our university here?
A little over three.
Well, it came out the fact that only maybe 600 would use it. And we said, well, what, should we have dorms or should we do? And they did a study also down the states. And if you've gone down the states lately and seen the new campuses, and they started coming on my campus 20 years ago, they are apartment-like complexes, gentlemen and ladies. And I don't say categorically, but the majority are moving that way. So you got the 18, 19, and 20-year-olds who are primarily the ones who want to go in there. So we said, all right, we'll design it so that there can be a group of four males, so they can use this, or eight males, or whatever. And hopefully, I don't agree with the co-ed, but that's happening here. And that in some point, there when a individual is older, you got a married family, they could apply on a proper application, and they could be accepted. They go into one of those units that on a family basis, so we'd have a multi-purpose there. Now, subsidizing by means of a direct appropriation is the cheapest way to fund the housing of students. I don't think there's any question about it. If you went on bonds, or if you had a private developer, they would want to have a return on their money, and the studies show, and I can tell you this from my point of view on the banking side, the students couldn't afford it. Now you ask, who are the students, and how are they going to be selected to get into the dorms? Well, that's a question that we felt that if we get these dorms started here, I think it's 264 rooms, is that correct?
Okay.
264 students, that we phased it in over a period of 2 or 3 years. We had about, we figured around 500 to 600, that we get on a waiting list and we start out. Fairbanks right now, the new dorm they're building there is more like an apartment-like complex, by the way, the new one that we are currently building right now. And there is a waiting list to get on the Fairbanks dorms. Hopefully this will alleviate. And the reason why I went on the more the apartment-like complex is that was the desire of the students at that time, because they didn't want to go into Wickersham or into the others because they're married or they were a different type of a concept there. So I'm trying to say why, how are you going to pick them? What's it going to be the financial status? I don't know. That's not my job. My job is to try to get the dorms here and be as practical as I can and broad as a spectrum of a building that could house, various needs.
But I think that there's agreement, it always has been agreement in principle from the Anchorage delegation to support the dormitories, and I think we've seen enough of the figures, because I know the Sheffield administration was toying with the revenue bonding and the like last year, that prices would be a student out of the market. There's no question about that. I think, and as far as the Fairbanks situation is concerned, where now that there exists the traditional dormitories, some students want an option of a different style, I think that's very understandable. The question is whether we start here with the traditional dormitory, or start here with what I have maybe a misnomer, called apartments. And from a public policy point of view, the rationale for having any housing must either be to help students economically who need that assistance, or to enhance their academic, I was going to say undergraduate, but their academic life experience by putting them in an environment where there is an academic community.
Said, let me answer that question the best I can. I can easily go flip-flop and go dorm, fine. But it's against our consultants' wishes that we've paid hard dollars for. It's against the university's wishes, and it's against the students' wishes. Now, I can just do that. I'll go dorms. But I'm just saying this is what we've been led to believe.
Okay.
Let me just ask a question. Right now, there is no housing.
No.
And the market survey, what it did, it said, what is your preference? Now, would you go along with this assumption that no matter what kind of housing, it's going to be full anyhow? The other thing that bothers me with the study is, did you survey potential students? I know the students that I talk to, the reason they don't come up here is because they can't get housing, so they go outside. So I don't know whether we surveyed potential students. Would you come to Anchorage if we had any kind of housing? But I'm making the assumption that no matter what kind you put up, you're going to have a full house. That being the case, maybe economy enters into it much more so than the desires, or where would you like to be, because you're always going to want, you know, maybe more than what the state's able to afford.
Dr. Parsons?
I think you're addressing the right push, because these other areas have these traditional things that are there already, and they're filling in with these campus-style apartments. But if you check big campuses over the country, if they've got 2,500 acres like Fairbanks does to sprawl out, that's one thing. We have a terribly limited land space to use here. And to then think in terms of two or three story apartments, because the market survey says that you should have
two or three apartment story residences.
And I don't like calling them dorms either, but residences for students of some sort, student housing. To then think in terms with the limited land space we have here to be having garden type residences, or whatever you want to call it, flies in the face of the limited urban reality we have here, and it seems to be unrepresentative of the needs of the area here.
Yeah, but then you're in the same token, though, Jim, are the ones who like to have the sprawled out, you like more of the open space concepts, you know, and you don't want to have a, you know.
Senator, it seems to me that we're constantly boxing ourselves into this or that, this or that. We're going sprawl versus something else. George Rogers was on sabbatical in Cambridge in the late 60s, and George sent me back a whole bunch of clippings of new universities in Britain. And it was fascinating. It were a power in a beautiful open landscape. I mean, it looked gorgeous. And you had your park, and you had your building, and you had, and there was parking there, but you still had lots of open space. So I don't think, you know, we can't have high-rise and parking and open space. I think we can have them all. Which makes me think of dormitories. The University of Hawaii, which has been around longer than we have here, has high-rise buildings that combine the concept of these condo or apartment units, they are apartment units or group living units, and the first floor, which was described as you walk in and there's a lobby and there's this, and there's a common room, and so on. You can combine them, and they're high-rise buildings. They're attractive, students like them, and I know local Honolulu students who move into these apartments and live in a group situation, but they're right smack on the Honolulu, the Moana, Manoa campus. They're right smack there. They're in a high-rise building, and they have a group facilities, but they're not two or three story units, the kind that you would find anywhere off campus here in Anchorage. And they're not beyond the fringe either.
Chancellor?
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of issues, of course, that have been coming around here. I'd like to address a few of them rather briefly. In the first place, I guess I want to just make a statement of a bit of a warning here. And this is based on the experience I had when I went to the Santa Barbara campus, University of California, in the early 60s, when it first started its major development. And at that time, it started adding a variety of student housing, all sorts of types of what it added. That's not what I'm going to address. What I want to address is something which Senator Josephson brought up, and that is the local rental market. Like all rental markets come and go. We're coming out at Anchorage at a time when it was exceptionally tight. At the present time, it's getting looser and looser. I can absolutely guarantee you that as the rental market loosens up, people will complain to you, do not build student housing because you're competing with the local rental market. And that will be true no matter what the student housing looks like. And I can also guarantee you that when that rental market tightens up, as it inevitably will, all rental markets come and go, you will have political pressure. You must build rapidly, far more rapidly, student housing than you'd planned to ease the rental market. That's why just a note of not real cynical warning, but I've seen it. It's going to, and the political pressures are going to be on you, that you're going to have those flip-flops from the community on that.
I'm going to speak my own biases here, and I'm going to speak for myself. But what concerns me is that we will have dormitories built, and we will not find any angry senators or representatives who oppose that. And then 3 or 4 years afterwards, we'll hear that the occupants of the units are typically married couples in their late 20s or 30s, and that there is still no dormitory experience in Anchorage for the prospective student leaving Kenai High School or West High School or Glen Allen or some other place to come to Anchorage and be a student at age 18, 19, or 20. That's a real concern of mine, because what we have in our mind's eye is in part offering that alternative to a student who wants to study in Anchorage as an undergraduate and may need emotionally and otherwise intellectually, socially, the experience that we think of as traditional dormitories.
I think our program responds to that remote thing of a priority of usage of the housing, where we started moving near just outside perhaps a short commuting distance and built itself backwards from the freshman on through occupying the building.
Sorry, you say a priority?
We build within a program of any kind of priority for those that would be using the housing. And the first priority really gets to the student who is the 17 or 18, 19-year-old full-time freshman. And then if there were vacancies, you would move to another group. But if that is the priority.
Well, now, then is your survey then weighted to consider the needs of that student who is supposed to be in the priority use?
No, it's not weighted. They just surveyed all the students and said how many are of that age group on the campus. That's what the age group came out to be.
Can I respond to that? Because the reason I mentioned this matter of local market is that when a university sets out to build student housing, unless the university is willing to drain money from its academic programs to subsidize a losing proposition, you better be darn sure that what you're doing is economically sensible and feasible. And that means that, for example, the cost to the student has to be at a level that when the market loosens up, you don't lose your clientele. Because if you do that, you've blown the economic feasibility of what you're going to do. Now, this means in particular that we have to focus on looking on economic feasibility on these very students that Vice Chancellor Picard has identified as our high priority. Now, in the feasibility studies, it was to take a look at the 17 and 18 and 19-year-old and ask the question, how many, given national experiences for certain types of responses to questions, how many are, what is your demand going to be from that group? What can they pay so you can assure that you're going to have your student housing at a high enough occupancy rate so it remains an economically feasible type of proposition? And so the studies, based upon our own fundamental belief, are that 17, 18, 19-year-olds, we have projected the type of housing at the economic cost that will focus in on their needs. Now, I guess the next thing goes back to a question that Senator Josephson you asked much earlier, which I think is really the crux of the matter. For whom do you really want to build your student housing for? What is the difference the student housing is going to make? And that really comes right down to, in my opinion, access to education. That's the crux of it. What are the groups, for example, that are having difficulty obtaining access to education in Anchorage because we don't have student housing? I see Senator Fisher has mentioned the the students who are coming in from the Kenai area. Anyone who comes outside of Anchorage and tries to come in Anchorage in a usual rental market situation has a lot of trouble. The practicalities of making the move in, and also the fact that they are separated from other students when they try to live in a regular market. You see, it's a critical point. It's been made several times that if you make studies of what makes a difference to a student in their education, in the quality of their education, those studies come over and over again. Who are the peers that they had a chance to be with socially to study with? If you have people coming in from the outside, such as Kenai, they find an apartment to live in somewhere in Anchorage, the chances of them having a good peer group experience is very small. And they have then lost an important part of their education. Now, another group in Alaska, which is very important to us, are the native students who come in from the bush areas. Whether it's University of Alaska Anchorage or any other place, our experience in their success rate in the university is very poor. What it essentially means, for example, in the case of UAA, that while they can be admitted to UAA, the fact that we are giving them true access to education just isn't there. There are a variety of steps that have to occur. And Ed and I have talked about this. We've got a task force that's worried about it. And we think we know how to proceed in this matter so we can get their success rate up to a level which is defensible. But that success rate is not going to occur, in our opinion, unless they're student housing.
Sure.
On the native student's performance, do we find the same experience factor in Fairbanks student, or is it just on this campus?
I don't have the comparative. Maybe Ed knows that.
Fairbanks is not very successful either. And what's happening, if I may say so, is Nana Corporation has approached us with a very interesting experience. There's John Shively doing this. So they will build some homes up there to house native students, primarily in their region, but other regions there too, to see whether that would help them get themselves more acclimated within the Fairbanks community.
Is it a matter of tutorial, or is it a matter of environmental and cultural kind of changes in the cultural shock?
Cultural, plus I don't think that the school system out in the bushes is preparing them for a university experience.
It is tutorial also.
And they have special programs to Dave wants to answer.
I would like to directly address what Walt's referring to there. I want to make it very clear. Student housing is not a panacea for native students. Student housing, however, is necessary. It's not sufficient. The sufficient part, then, occurs in a variety of approaches and programs, which you see Ed and I and our two campuses have to work out cooperatively. We've had some good conversations there. I'm quite confident, given the experiences of what works, which has been done at other universities, that we can, when we have the student housing, can develop programs for our native students that are even truly access to the university, which they cannot have unless they have that housing, as a necessary but not sufficient part.
I'm really bothered. And the more I hear, the more bothered I am by the decisions being made today that preempt flexibility for the future, that push us into directions that I think are going to, could be very harmful. And this housing again illustrates it. Unfortunately, I've not had the opportunity to see the Lane study, the designs or the concept discussions for the housing, and I was not present at the Anchorage Legislative Caucus meeting, or I came at the tail end of it when the presentation was made on the proposed housing, and for your information, I was the only Anchorage legislator who spoke up in favor of this apartment-type housing. I mean, at least to have us consider it. Everyone else was just flat no. But what I'm much more concerned about is, again, the sort of lack of overall planning, the short-range approach, you know, sort of the here and now, let's build a few units, and once more, the approach to campus development. We're going to put housing at the fringe, and when you tell me that you're concerned about native students, about the Kenai students, sort of the ones who come in, and then you stick them out someplace, you might as well have a gravel pit. And many of them will be ACC students. So you stick them over here, they're not part of any campus. You might as well build a dormitory over on Muldoon Road.
We'll take it.
part of the campus. You know, at least, you know, an APU, they're integrated. You know, you've got a couple of dorms, they're close. You know, it's spread out, but at least you've got a unit. But, and I just don't know what kind of planning you people are doing. I mean,
they're
going
to go to the closest restaurant they can get to,
and
it's going to be the
down
Pines,
because
I can't do it.
And I'm really bothered by the approach that's being followed here. I don't know to what extent, you know, I see Jim and Dennis sort of apparently not being part of your planning process, because Jim seems to be as concerned as I am about some of the issues, and so is Dennis. And I don't know to what extent they've been consulted, but I also see a straight line commitment on the part of the university people that sort of your minds are made up that you're not going to listen to anyone. You know, you smile benevolently and listen to this politician, and you know the politician will go away, and that's it. Let me throw out a proposition here. The university asked for $11 million for campus housing. The Anchorage delegation is providing $15 million. Okay, how about opening your minds and broadening your vision and saying, okay, they're giving us $15 million. What can we do for that? How can we serve the students better? You know, here's a new opportunity. Maybe you could take a new look, and instead of exiling the students down here by Tudor Road, you put them up here near a new building where you can have a path. I see there's a path across here already, where you can have another path open. They'll tie the UAA ACC students in with the closer to the APU students. You stick the housing in here someplace, make your transition or exchange of land a little more rapidly, and I know they're complicated, but they can be done. You know, think of integrating the students into the campus, if that's what we're trying to do.
Okay. No, just a second. Please stay up there, Senator. You know, and I'm not trying to get
I'm not a senator.
All right,
as
okay.
Big Fisher has been trying to get the
and I don't disagree. I'll just tell you the practical problems here, and I don't offer any solutions there. When you talk about putting up the dorms up there, you know, up at the upper right-hand side, you know, with a little pathway over to APU, what have you. If you look at the ring over there, that's further away than where we're going to
put them here. Put them here.
But we don't own the land, and we can't build where you've got your hand on there. We're not allowed to build here. This is a floodplain. This is a floodplain. It's desert.
Right.
We can't do
okay,
it.
So right, you don't own
we
this
don't
land.
Own any of this,
who,
no.
Okay, who owns it?
Well, Jim, you know.
Well, it's partly U.S. Public Health Service and partly private.
They do own the second half of that.
For $15 million, you can buy the private land. If we give you the...
You live there, don't you?
Well, I think that the current two residences could be bought out at an appropriate price. Then the municipality of Anchorage and the federal government.
Hey, but, Ed, you don't follow what I'm talking about. I'm not being literal when I point to here or point to here or point to here. I'm talking about the concept. I'm talking about your sort of... what appears to me to be a narrow vision where you make commitments as you go along. Somebody said we'll put the student housing down here. Maybe the student housing should be here. I don't know which land we own nowadays. Maybe it ought to be right here. Maybe we take this goddamn parking and move that down here and put the dormitory here.
Put it in the left-hand parking lot,
right here.
In the center of the campus.
If parking is a problem, if we're giving you $15 million, use the first three floors for parking and then build a tower. I'm throwing out ideas, and the $15 million won't do it unless you need another $5 million. But let's do the damn thing right.
Well, gentlemen, this has been stimulating, and we'll resume this after lunch. I just want to follow up, and I'm very grateful to you, Regent Rasmussen, for taking the time to join us today. I'd like to just follow up on that. It's something to think about, is just that... Correct me if you think I'm wrong, but as I understand it, we started with the premise that there was a survey of student desires. Somehow, I think Senator Paul Fisher raised the issue of whether that survey included the potential applicants for admission who may opt to go elsewhere because their needs are not being met. And then I heard that there is a, although the region said the board has not set any priorities on use and those decisions have to be made, that there is somewhere cooking a a priority table as to who will be eligible on a first-call basis to go to the dormitories, and we heard that that would be maybe the 17, 18, 19-year group. And I'm not, if that's true, and I think it should be true, I'm not sure of the validity of the survey anyway, which encompasses other user groups. So I have some confusion in that area, and find some dissatisfaction about that. I'd like to resume this then at 1:30. Senator Hoffman?
Just one other thing that we're not remembering in terms of who goes where is we're trying to represent students, parents, and either taxpayers or resource assessors, however we want to put it. But I think when I'm looking at my daughters at their 13th and 14th years, I'm going to want them in a dormitory, whether they want to have an apartment or not.
So you should survey the fathers and females.
I want to have to hear your follow-up, Rick, 5 years from now.
In the last political act,
before we disperse, I for one, am here to stay right on through the meeting, and if there's anyone else who's staying around, I'd just soon keep the group going. Of us who are staying here.
I have a noon commitment that I made, thinking we would want a lunch break, so I'd like to come back shortly after 1 o'clock.
You know, one of the things that
excuse me, just on that point, could we reconvene at 1? Will you be back at 1? When we reconvene at 1?
Mr. Chairman, if maybe people could think about part of the political pressure, it works this way. And I understand, we have told you, damn it, we want housing. And so there are pressures there. What alternatives do we have now that we're where we are and we have this thing and everybody's bought into it, maybe from the university, but all these other pressures coming and we can get pretty carried away down there sometime. How do we find a way so that we're going to be comfortable about it and we're going to address some of these kinds of planning issues? I hope we can come back with some positive ideas of, okay, what happens now?
Okay, we'll be back at 1.
For this campus, for the facilities, for the
For the Anchorage campus. Out of that, I don't think we have used more than about, 500,000? Less than that?
Less than that, yeah.
How was that? We've intended to go design-build on that one.
Design-build on that?
Yes, that was the board's decision that we should try design-build because of, you know, the cost factors and the fact that since contractors and the industry itself are familiar with the techniques, design-build seemed to be a prudent way to do it. And we are going design-build for both projects in Juneau and Anchorage, which means there were about four steps that we had to do. One was we did the market study. Second was the master planning of the whole campus as to where the housing would be located and the location of the housing itself. And the third part was to do the site development, which is like once the site was identified, we were going to figure out exactly where the housing would be done. So that would be separate from the design build issue itself. The last part, the design build, was to go out with a very specific requirement as to what was entailed in that and have the design build contractor bid on the project.
One question on that line. Are you finding that really still the most feasible way? I recall the concerns over the new federal, the state office building. The architectural people saying it's going to cost them upwards of $500,000 just to do this work with no assurance that they'll get the property. We're going to have the same kinds of concerns with this?
Do you mean
I get your question.
The question was that with the state office building, there were so many built-in requirements on design build that each bidder would cost around $500,000 to submit plans.
Yeah.
They would even have a chance to without letting alone getting the contract.
Yeah, that was one person's statement. I was told by people both interested in bidding and by the design coordinator that was way out of line.
There's a two-step process. One is called the design evaluation, the other one is called the cost evaluation. Both those issues will be determined now. It's like any other contracting business when you, normally the traditional method, the documents would be prepared and then you would bid on that. So the contractor spends a lot of money preparing for that bid. So design build is nothing, no different from that, except that it has one element added to that. They have to have a team of architects and engineers designing the facility for them too, along with them. So the package gets a little bit more in line. And certainly they have to spend a lot of money. I don't know how much, but quite a bit of money to prepare the documentation as they would normally in a contractual jobs too. For instance, if you had an office building designed by an architect and if there are four or five contractors who wanted to bid on that, they spend a considerable amount of time making estimates on that. So it's the same kind of process.
Mr. Rasmussen.
University of Alaska, other than maybe one or two buildings, have never gone design build. And there's been a lot of public comment to us by contractors that say we can do it cheaper than what in the traditional method. There have been some number of regions who felt they want to try the design build, so that's the reason why we've gone to that route to try it, at least try it, vary it around. Now, I'm sure there are maybe some problems like that, but if the legislature feels that we shouldn't go design build, go the traditional way, that's fine, but you know, I find that my question is, the responsibility of the region, I ask, why should your building cost us $200 to $210, $220 a square foot? And you'll find that in a building like this, it's not design built, and it's a nice building, no problem with it, but you will find everything is the latest of mahoganies or oak or the finest the hardware on the walls or whatever. The theory being, well, you need that strength to have a building to last a long time. Well, there's some of us feel that maybe we don't have to go to the Cadillac, we go to the Ford, but still have a building that lasts a long time, and we'll try the design build approach. So if it doesn't work, we'll try something else. We're not going to be that far off. I don't think, I'm not of the opinion that we're going to save that much money, but I think that we will save a certain amount.
One question. This building was not design build?
No, well, none of our buildings, to my knowledge, have been design built, except maybe one or two that Chris could address that.
It's pretty hard to normally do a building design build unless it's traditional, like housing. Housing is so familiar that people know how to do even the mechanics of it, like a contractor is so familiar with the kind of where you put your sheetrock or you buy some material from a particular place. So it's an element that keeps on me repeating quite often, so it's easy to go design building because it's very familiar. An unusual building in an academic area, it's design build is very hard to describe because once what happens, you get to know is, for instance, in a design build, somebody forgets to put flush outlets in a bathroom, you don't get it. You got to prescribe everything very carefully. That's, you know, what you put down is what you get from the contractor.
Thank you. you know, that breaks out of the question. We're out dealing with the state building. The state is going out with a design building. You just think it's that's really not a feasible way to go.
This building, yeah, sure, it's a feasible way to go. It's just a statement. But most of our buildings in the university are not
our
typically
purpose,
a single purpose building.
We felt the dorm was one of the few settings that we could go on a design structure. And we were trying to see whether we could match up some similarities between Juno and Anchorage. Never worked if you work in other camps.
I have to digress on this, but what's the difference between a traditional office building and this complex here?
You have lots of other issues, like an office building you would generally design only for clerical typing and all that stuff. In this kind of building, I think you have health science added to this.
Well, this building, like most of our academic buildings, the transitional building, is designed, specified as an administrative, administration classroom building. Eventually, sometime, it'll be a totally administrative use. But in the meantime, it's going to be administrative and academic. Right now, we have the school of actually the whole college of nursing and health sciences is housed in the building. Now, there's quite a few classrooms in the building also. As time goes by, those classrooms then, as other buildings are built, as nursing begins to move out and more administrative function comes in here, those particular rooms will be remodeled into office use. So part of the architectural difficulty then was to design a building which had we need a medium-sized classroom very badly, which had space which could initially be used for medium-sized classroom and would work for that, but then at a subsequent time could be remodeled for general office type of use. So it's a very much of a dual-use building where the academic part would be phased out over a period of time.
But are we paying a premium then by putting the health programs in here? And all of the kinds of programmatic needs you need to put a premium for that.
Oh yes.
That you'd lose in the long run because you convert this building into a office building or whatever.
Well, it isn't clear that even if that wasn't the problem, that we would be able to deal with the questions of the student services and the registrar area and the control of people, which is involved. For example, things like registration, design, build type of situation. Now, this isn't. Well, it has an awful lot of office use. It is not a standard office use type of building. For example, you see when we do registration, the building is designed so the student will come in. They don't have to go to any other place on campus to do the business aspect of the registration. The student services counters are there, registrar's counters, business affairs counters are there. So they come in and they do the one process. And all the support facilities then are focused into this one area so they can do it. It is so from this respect, it's not just plain commercial square footage.
I think maybe the last 6 years a little bit of paranoia is showing in the way I'm thinking about this. But last year, after a three-year fight, we finally got $1.25 million for planning an Anchorage dormitory. Now we're hearing that this is going to be a new experiment with design build. We spent less than half of that, and that's gone into a market study and master planning. But if we decide you don't want to go design build or design build won't work, then we're not bid ready for a project.
No. You're hearing. We're going to go design build unless. No, we are going to design build.
Then why do we need $1.25 million?
Well,
which we haven't spent.
Yeah, we've spent about, I don't know, X number, like 400,000.
Okay,
because we'll detail. Okay, go ahead.
Normally in a traditional method of designing, if that's the route we'd have gone, you'd have to pay a lot of architect fees up front and have the documentation ready. The moment we decided to go design build, we do a lot of work is relegated to the design build group. However, we're still developing what we call the programs, which is not exactly a working drawing, but a very strong set of specification will tell exactly what we need a person. We will be at that stage. We are not there yet at the moment. We are at the preliminary, I think at about the end of April, we'll have the documentation ready. So we'll be using quite a bit of that money too. We may not use exactly $1.5 million, but part of the money is for site planning, which is site development, which is a separate part of a contract. We intentionally wanted to do that because we want to move ahead and be ready for the building to be on board. Otherwise, what we could have done was have the site and the building done at the same time, which means that much time was taken just to develop the site. Like what we did with the building over here. We did get $10 million to, at least for the initial part of it. We didn't wait around, we went ahead and prepared the site. So next, when we get the additional $15 million for the rest of the building, we'll be right on target to put the building on
16.67.
Well, all I can say is that the experiment failed. I'll have a long memory.
And if it does succeed,
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, yeah.
I started out by saying my paranoia, I'm sure, is showing. Because having fought for that for as long as we have, I'm reluctant to do anything that's not exactly as we've gone through the process each other place. Yeah. And that's what we used as justification to get the money last year.
We feel that by this way we'll have a cheaper, when I say cheaper, I don't mean a cheap building, but less of a price for real.
I guess maybe I'm not hearing the right thing. Are we now saying that we're locked in the dormitory, or the modular unit type housing, and that's it, and that's the only way we can go? Or can there still be a reversal around to the traditional dormitory?
Yeah, it's traditional dormitory. I don't know what it entails to convert that. We are not locked in such a thing that cannot change. And if it's, I don't know, we haven't asked the question yet. We have asked the consultant the question, can you do it now if there's a change of interest? That answer should be coming back in about this week sometime.
Okay, could you suggest, let's assume that for some reason the decision somewhere is going to be made that should go traditionally dormitory, how much money will we have expended at that point for the modular type?
About $500,000.
But how much is that a bit wasted? Is that true? I think...
How much is that wasted? Not much.
The thing is, the frustration that I'll show here is that we went out and the regions themselves are ambivalent one way or the other. Says, well, what do you want? And so we hired the people to have the hearings and talk with the university and students. This is what they want to come up with. So we've been proceeding down this little line. A bunch of meetings, basically. And if that's and if there is a switch or a political situation that the do not want to go up this way, or there's a feeling that, well, maybe we like to get it appropriated and then hold it in abeyance for a complete master plan then, we can do that. It can be done. This can delay it a bit.
Going along with that concept, if the money were appropriated, pending a development of a master plan, about how much time you're talking about? You're not talking that much time. Anyway.
Well, it depends on which direction we're going. Right now, we're trying to complete by October or November next year. With the run that we're going. If there's a change in stream of a different direction to go dormitories, then we need to look at what that is. I don't know, but I can't give you an answer. If they can do design flow and maybe just change the spec, maybe we'll be behind by a couple of months only.
Right, so you're talking 8 months from now to then, before completion?
No. It would be January 86.
January 86.
Okay, when do you go to bid, or would you go to the?
We would go to bid, for this traditional, the method in which we're going right now, we could go to bid in June, actually, but, our money doesn't come till July, so we'll go out in July or August.
The critical thing from a timing point of view is that if whenever plans are ready to bid, there's about a 90-day process in there. That 90-day process has got to end in time to get into the ground before it becomes very expensive. This means you have to start somewhere in October, depending upon the year, maybe late in November. If you come in later in that, where your costs of preparing the ground because furrows are so high, and you have to postpone, then you've lost quite a few months. And this is when the timing matter becomes rather critical.
How many units are we talking about?
We're talking about 56 or 52? 55 units.
Times four.
That's about roughly
220 units, roughly. On the other hand, that's $0.8 million budget. So if we're talking about a higher budget, there will be considerably more units.
Well, we're also talking about twice as many units times two. We're talking about dormitories, not apartments.
Do you think you can get more units in dormitories than apartments? Is that what you're saying? I don't quite understand.
Well, we're talking about the same load.
Okay, all right.
Yeah. Half the size, twice.
This is what I mentioned earlier, you're still into about a 250 square foot per student, however you cut that.
I was just referring to the other numbers.
It's still 225 students, whether you're in a dormitory or in the other.
You mentioned, by the way, that there were operational savings to be derived by what we've been talking about as apartments. Is there some analysis of that we could look at?
I have some here, which Bill Ulick has provided with me. The first place on the capital, difference. Original present plans have in three phases, the first three phases, you see, which go into 1990, of having three phases of 224 students, basically about 660 to 670 students, whether you would do the four-bedroom plan we presently have, or if we would change to the dormitories. In the case of the four-bedroom units, the budget figures which I have in front of me would show about $31 million for those number of students. In the case of the dormitories, the budget figures I have right here show about $29 million. And so there's about a $2 million difference of construction costs. In the case of the operation, by the time of full operation of those three units, which would be 1990, the annual operation and maintenance costs of the four bedroom units we have shows a little over $600,000 projected. In the case of the standard dormitories, we're talking about almost $1 million annual operation.
Is that including food service or excluded?
Includes. Everything's inclusive. And so you see, so the concern then, you see, is that there certainly is a savings in terms of initial construction cost if we go into the dormitories, namely the ratio is about 1/15, we're talking about roughly. The increased operating costs, however, from the analysis I have here, appears to be very significant. And from as I try to project years in the future where we worry about operating and everything, including the academic programs, I worry about that difference in operating costs. I think that's pretty high. Now, there are some open questions on this operating cost.
Well, let me, one option might be to site the dormitory so the students would have access to the Lucy Cuddy Center or the Campus Center for what does that do to this analysis?
I don't think that cost
is involving the operation of food service. But if you the residence operation, the difference in it is about a third in operating between regular standard dormitory and these other...
So that doesn't include the food service?
I don't believe
that. Okay.
What's that attributable to? If you get the same number of students cutting it up one way or the other per square foot. And we had mentioned the cleaning issue.
What else would it be? This is basically where you get into cleaning and administration. That, you know, if you just look at cleaning itself as an example, if the students do their own cleaning and the students buy their own tissue, their own cleaning materials within their apartment, just like they would normally do, and you save that from being what the university provides. If you have a hall and you have to provide, say, two custodial or maintenance personnel, when you take their salaries and their benefits and think and add that to that, you're into about a $70,000 difference just in the salaries of those two people that you would not provide if you didn't have these big lounges and common bathrooms and things to clean, where the students would clean their own. Does that answer?
I'm skeptical because I don't know how much that is there is to that, and because under either system you could have rules that might close that gap.
Well, I've heard that too. You know, you could have a rule saying what we're going to have is volunteer labor in the dormitories. I haven't seen that really workable. I don't know where the students all get together and go down and clean the lounges. I've heard them mess it up a lot, but I haven't too much. I think you always have to have the actual professional cleaning people in the building doing the cleaning within the halls.
Mr. Ferguson?
It might work someplace. I just haven't seen it anywhere.
Not to be caught under the $600,000 or the $1 million. As I recall, the initial plan was to have these design-build, which tells us that there is some debt service, be it lease or true debt. How much is this?
We'll have X number of millions of dollars approved by the legislature. They'll design build within that limit, and they'll be paid for 100%.
This is not lease purchase.
This is design build.
Okay. So there is no debt service in either one of these.
I assume these cost analyses are available.
Just
comparative analyses.
Another question on that. That includes at least the provision of
I'm not finished. This only gives you the totals.
They have the whole debt one. I just have the summary for you.
Okay. We'd like to copy that to the committee later. Senator Hall.
Okay, the question is still, what's included? If it does include the operation of food service, in a traditional dormitory, it includes a full kitchen facility, I assume. And in the apartment buildings, it includes kitchen facilities in each room, for each apartment, right?
Not to my understanding, but it is separate from the operation of the dining hall, sir.
Operation, what about the capital component? The 29 to 31 million for the 3 years.
You're asking, I really don't have a good answer for that. Maybe when facilities is planning, looking at this phasing of the $11.8 million that we were asking for, that did not include any dining hall provisions.
Well, I'm separate based on the example that was just made on the cost of traditional dorms versus...
But I know we ran a thing that was about $200,000 for the operation of a cost, $225,000 for the heat, light, utilities, and cleaning services in the apartment-type arrangement of a residence hall versus about $300,000 if it were in the dormitory style, traditional dormitory style, where you had to provide a cleaning. So it was about a third difference. Now, I'm not sure what Dr. Alcala is referring to, because I think that's still a difference between the $600,000 and the $1 million if that's what he was referring to. I'm not sure what...
Well, yeah, but what we're trying to figure out is if, in fact, you could use probably just kitchen additions to the existing food service facilities, and then have dormitories without food service facilities, but so they had easy walking distance to those facilities. What the real cost comparison is of a dormitory in its best setting versus a dormitory in its worst setting compared to an apartment in a setting that doesn't matter to an apartment.
Okay.
That's
better. You could do that. I assume you could build enlarged the dining hall, kitchen areas.
Well, the hall is big enough. It's a kitchen facility. What you need is a kitchen that can serve exterior.
I would agree. The hall is probably big enough for the people that we would accommodate in housing for the 200, maybe a little more as we went through the phases. I'm not sure if it's big enough to accommodate the current users of the building and the students that we'd be putting in housing.
Well, the housing students would be there morning and evening.
I haven't analyzed that. I actually can't
give any idea. The impact.
Well, I would assume the big impact. See, we aren't open in those halls, not like on weekends. So I'm sure there's an operational cost here. I have not looked at that.
Okay.
I can't give you a good answer.
Maybe what I'm hearing here, and I'm trying to get this thing to put together, because the faces of Buck kind of talks to us in the regions and with you all and the funding here. And perhaps what we should do is come back to the legislature as to how long we feel it's going to be feasible to do a complete master plan. And we've got a lot of it done already, because the land is pretty well squared around. We've got our academic programs within reason there. And come back and say, this is going to be what it's going to entail, including public hearings, as well as the sign-off by the UAA UAA advisory board, and all the input from you all as representative of the people, and then agree that this is the time that we're going to do it. Whatever is basically a rush to that, as we agree on this, and that if it's not going to take long in this particular session, that the money is appropriated, but it's going to be left there until it's agreed upon master plan, and I don't envision this taking a year or so to do. And I don't know exactly how long it is. That's why I said we have to come back with you as our best guesstimate. And then the idea of going the fast track of it would speed up the process and get our dorms in place faster, or whatever way we're going to go.
Well, I don't know if I can respond to all of that, but I'd say that, again, speaking for myself, I have a bias, I guess, for the traditional dormitory situation, obviously, and I haven't been persuaded.
Yeah, but what? But
I also have a sense of responsibility on the question of the operating expenses downstream, and so I'd like an opportunity to look at that, and I might be persuaded to change my mind if I think some of the constituents can do it the same way, and that we can't be capricious about this. So if that's the purport of your remarks, we'd be glad to.
Well, that's part of it, but the same token, I think part of my remarks goes this way. There's no sense in trying to plan this university or any university in Alaska around a table like this. We've got to agree to some sort of a plan that
yes, this is the early phase and the monies that we need in order to go ahead with the development. And now they're saying, well, let's get this plan in place, and then we go ahead with the building of the dorms. I suspect that what you're saying, Sutter, is that if we can show you the operating costs and versus the apartment types, you might say, well, clearly it's better for the apartment route than the dorm route. Then we might have you'll say that's fine, but then you might have a problem of where we're siting on the campus. So I said, let's get it all done, and we all agree that once it's been passed, the public input has been in, and it's been agreed to by the UAA Advisory Board and the Chancellor and the planning staff here at UAA, after all the input, then we go with that.
I think we are here process-oriented as much as we are project-oriented, that we've had some concerns about local input, not so much legislative input, and about the role of the advisory council. And so anything that comes out of this meeting that improves that process from a standpoint of local control and raises is productive. Mr. Furnish,
just one of the things to share with you with the body. The respective coordinators of the Senate and the House has requested a meeting with the Regent Board. And I understand Don is the current president,
yes.
Chairman of the board, and he's out for surgery.
But he'll be back. He's successful, and he'll be up and around in about 10 days.
Okay.
But the Regents are going to meet in Juneau on the 8th and 9th of March.
Joe, then we might want to schedule a meeting. I know there's a great deal of...
I know I will not be there at that meeting, but that's the only meeting I'll be missing this year. I will not be at that meeting. But they'll be in Juneau at that time.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, sir.
Just kind of an additional comment. I think that would be an excellent opportunity to have that meeting. But in a way, this follows your remarks follow very closely to the word we've been getting from the Regents, which basically said we're not going to propose a lot of buildings until we get these things done, and the doctors are in, and there's support for that. And I guess it's kind of, do we go ahead and build one or two more and then do the planning, or do we stop if we can see a very short time? I think people get very discouraged with plans that never do anything, and it isn't a process that's going to lead to anything. And there's a great deal of desire on the part of the legislators to see something built. But on the other hand, I think they're very reasonable people, that if they saw that, yeah, they're really going to address some of those things that came up here today, and we've got X period of time to do it, and obviously we've got the resources to do it, it looks like, with what's through here and what's proposed, it makes not a lot of sense to me, what you're suggesting, if it doesn't take 2 years to do it. Yeah.
I just want to add to what you and Arliss have said, and that is that there is among legislators a respect for the special role of the university, of the fact that the university is sort of a separately established institution, that we try to keep the governor off the university's back when as much as we can, and legislators respect the university. And what you've seen in the dormitory is essentially sort of a response on the part of the majority of the Anchorage legislators who don't really want to tell the university what to do and how to do it, yet have grave reservations. And the problem with all this is that these two feelings, you might call, or policies or beliefs, collide in the appropriation process. Are usually reflected in the attitude of legislators toward the university budget. We just saw a big explosion last week on that, and which can hurt us right down the line. and so I think it's necessary to follow a process such as you suggest. I have, as you might have noticed, strong opinions. Several of us have discussed some alternative siting that probably would be by far better than anything that has been considered so far, in part because what you suggested now was never on the table. So if there could be a process that would put some of these ideas on the table, subject them to discussion by the students, by the advisory committee, and so on, when there's a real open process, I think that your suggestion, Ed, would be very good. Because
we don't want to go on. We all want to be in lockstep with you all. We don't want to be going diametrically opposed. I'm the only one person in the regions here, but I'm sure I speak for a lot of them. We don't want to have any major problems with the legislature. And nor with the university. And if we can perhaps get back to you on March as to what we think is a reasonable timetable with the UAA. I don't know, I can't speak for UAJ. Maybe they already, they're going to,
we don't care about that.
Yeah, but they like, you know, they're going to go, they're going to go the door for the party room.
The only caution I have is that I don't want to create an environment politically where other legislators or the governor say, well, Anchorage isn't ready, and
oh, sure,
we can't use this money anyway.
Yeah, you see, that, I know exactly what you're talking about. That's why we've got to get back with you pretty fast and the timing schedule there. And, don't know what that is right now. We're going down pretty fast on the road, as you know, to get these things built the way we thought we should build them.
Mr. Picard and Mr. Hart.
I get a second a little discouraged, all right, perhaps not with the process, but we have done a lot of the things I think that's being discussed here. We have had a large number of student inputs into this plan that we've come up with. It isn't something that we just kind of created ourselves administratively and said, this is what we want to do. This really came from the direction of the students and the members of the committees on the housing. We've done this kind of broad approach on the campus. If you take the time and review like the higher report on the location, you can see where a lot of diagrams and graphs and all the people involved reviewed all those to determine where that location would be the best, given the amount of information we do. So it isn't as if we just sat down administratively and one or two of us decided that this is where the spot would be. I'm sure we can take the next step as Regent Rasmussen suggests and include it into a broader plan of the campus. But if a lot of people give an awful lot of time already, and they have been volunteer laborers, they haven't been the paid laborers. So it's very hard to get that same volunteer input when they say, well, I said the best thing I could, and now you're re-ignoring me again. So there has been a lot of input from the
Yeah, we're basically going to see something. There's been a lot of planning process, but what I see over here in the discussion today is the policy, the philosophy in which the direction went. If you change that philosophy, the whole tenure of the planning process changes. But to answer maybe Senator Jaluski's question, whether we should stop now and look at everything else, I come from India, and I used to look back at the trains that they used to run there. They're slow trains and the fast trains. You can't stop all the trains. You got to let the slow trains move and the fast trains move too. So you got to keep on at the same time. I think you got to do the planning and also bring it. Politically, it's viable, and sure, just like life itself. We have a lot of misfits. They're not that much bad a misfit, you know, as long as there are concerned people and take a look at it. And I think planning can be done that way. You know, no planning sometimes is planning also, but there are people looking at it all the way. So I would recommend that you move at a tandem and just take care of it. And the second process that Regent Rasmussen says, we are doing that. In fact, the Board of Regents have made it implicit in their planning process that we go through all the education policy now, and the fiscal, and the planning. We've truly got an integrated planning process. It's just that we don't have a clear footprint of everything at this point. I mean, it's all taking shape. And I would suggest that we would just keep on going.
I'm glad Chris said what he did on top of everything else that's been just said, because one of the things that became very clear in our discussion during lunch hour is that sort of academic land use planning, some of the various steps that have been going on over recent years have precluded some of the choices that we've been talking about today, if we really want to look at some of the questions that have been raised, we have to go back to the basic policies that were set some years ago or a few years ago and say, okay, given today's situations, given new questions, might we not sort of, use this feedback loop to re-examine the policies and maybe revise them if called for? And I think that's where what you both are talking about could be a very useful step. And it probably would, as Chris says, it wouldn't have to take long because both planning processes ought to be ongoing.
The study material, I think you've spoken, indicates that the greatest demand is in the 70s.
There are two figures. I was talking about the soft figure, the hard figure, which is the 650 that the canvas was for 1890. But if you look at the soft figure, actually there was something like 20% of the, 80% of the 20-year-olds, and about half of them was about 26 years.
And that's the group that is most price-sensitive.
Price-sensitive, no, a second. They're the ones who really are looking for a true university setting. Mm-hmm.
No, I think we got to just forget about whether they can afford it or not. We want, you know, like in Fairbanks, out there with a richer farm or whatever, they're in the dorms and they want that. And we want to do this for Anchorage, too. We want to have a true university setting. And what we did is, when with our consultants, we found out how many people would, in effect, utilize the dorms, no matter what the cost would be. And this is what they came up with. The amount of people, they say you can phase it in over a period of 7 or 8 years, and you can phase in approximately 230 units each phase, and then you'd use them to the most efficient manner. So if we built all 609 now, 600 or so right now, we would not be able to use 600 of them. That's what we heard from, at least that's what I heard from the consultants.
Is there anything else to be said about the 300 class?
Well, I don't want you to have the impression that we were not included, that the citizen committee wasn't included in planning for the location of the dorm, because we were, and several of us participated in that. I just heard of another location proposal that was not part of that look, so, you know, our group's open. However, I think that South 35 location is the best from our perspective of what has been studied. I want to say that I'd be very concerned about losing the money that people have talked about for this building that's been promoted over the last couple of years, because our major commitment is to get a university on the ground here, and it's here in a small way now, but it's going to be a while before it's really a comprehensive school. So that 12 to 15 million is a building. If it isn't a dormitory, it's something else. And if our group bought off on promoting dormitories a couple of years ago as kind of a secondary priority, because we felt that this was a necessary thing, a necessary identity for a comprehensive school to have, and necessary capability and whatnot. So certainly don't want some kind of second overview approach to delay the funding of this building, or we want to start talking about another building quick. I think that there are some ongoing processes that would feed into what's been talked of here. One is a planning charrette to get at this master plan. Now, if the priority is deciding on what form the dormitory should take or where it should go to meet the appropriation timing, and I think that's, you know, that process could accommodate that. And that's just a matter of, the Chancellor and his staff and my group haven't worked out the timing, because we've been doing NCAA matters and everything else, but so that's next week or something, you know, near term.
Joe, will you assure him on our behalf that the money will be there?
Yeah, the money will be there, as far as we can do, you know, we can go apartments one time, dorms next time, dorms, you know, I'll bet you will happen, personally, in the next 15 years, we'll see a combination of both.
Probably.
See, if somebody had surveyed me when I was 17,
all the way.
I was a college freshman at 17, and had given me the option of an apartment, I would have probably taken that option, not for the obvious reason, but I could have, eaten my Twinkies and pizza in my apartment. I think I was probably better off not having had that option or presented to me.
I think you're right. I did that once. A couple times where, back in the crazy days, when we were going to co-ed dormitories, you know, hours and things. So we're feeling much the same, I guess, as a parent, that we surveyed the parents of the students that are going to come to the college and asked them if they want their daughters or sons to live in that situation. You know what they did? They said yes. And they signed permission slips for their sons or daughters to live in kind of the co-ed situation, and then called us on the telephone to tell us, don't tell my son or daughter that. But don't let them do it anyway. So I think there seems to be a big difference here between what they're saying to their sons and daughters that are 17 and 18 and how they would let them live than they are when, as soon as you let them live that way, they wish to call you and tell you, no, you probably shouldn't, but don't tell them that I said so. So I think there's a gap in here, and it's how it really comes out.
Joe?
Yes?
Could I just reinforce what you said? Because this was a real important point about the money will be there. the money will be there for dorms. I don't think anyone suggested that any questions being raised here will, it would or should or could stop the dorms. The money will be there. I think the legislative intent is clear, but the fact that that we allocated instead of 11 point some million dollars, and we went up to $15 million, so obviously the legislators want the dorms as much as anyone here, and we'll be funding them, so it's really only a matter of resolving these policy issues.
But I think there is a problem, though, potentially, in creating an image of disarray and confusion where something gets deadline.
Senator Fisher, just quickly, two questions. I was going through this. We're going to get a copy of this.
Yeah.
Okay, what was the cost of the study?
How much?
Phase one.
This for
65,000? No, this is just on housing here. Pardon?
Probably 65,000.
Okay. Then one other question. When we talk about two-bedroom units for married people, do both have to be a student or just one?
Yes, that's, you know, it's really not decided. What we were saying is that we built this place. Got them. Chances are, as we would start out, there would really be single students in the halls. Now, come summertime, when you have an older group of students, then you can make these kinds of conversions without having to do construction. That would really part
of just looking at this, I guess my concern was that we're talking about married students, and I don't know how the priority will flush out, but I guess I have a concern where they're both not students, and yet they get priority over single students.
I think if you got into a married student house, the priority would go to those who were both students. Where married, if you then ended up with an odd number, you could go the other direction. But it's to serve the full-time student, not the rent up.
Senator, we had that in spades in 1976 and 77 in Fairbanks, when there was no spaces available, and the people were the abuses where they were working on the pipeline and living in the dorms there, and we stopped that. And you just do it by some tough policies, just like their Dr. McCarthy. You say they're going to be full-time, and they've got to show that they are full-time, and they pass X number of credits to show full-time status, or you're going to have exactly what you're talking about.
Is there anything further on that?
We're having a little caucus here.
Senator Hopper, one thing that I think probably ought to be said, and that is it's going to take unity in the entire delegation if we're going to get student housing. It's got to go in on a legislative side. And I think there's probably enough people that are opposed to putting the money into apartments. You may lose the whole thing if you keep going there.
I went over there. They have to consult my partners, and they think I may be over-optimistic.
You may be correct, but I think when you add in the appropriation, if you have, say, the $15 million, which I've heard, that was introduced, if you have to take $4 million of that and put that to a dining hall arrangement, which would serve, I think that's another problem. You have to figure in the cost of adding them to the kitchens or whatever that are currently available in the dining space out of that $15 million. And somehow to me there's a balance in here someplace where we're trading off dining hall space or living space.
The balance goes the other way because per unit it's more expensive to have kitchens in each one of them. And if you can do it by adding to existing facilities in the Cuddy Center or the Campus Center, it'll be cheaper. Because your figure for three dormitories with the capital cost was higher for apartments than dormitories at the same number of people by, 2 million in the first three, right?
The issue here is...